With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I really want you to cook for me.
Yeah, sure, I'll cook for you.
Because one of my favorite memories is when I came downstairs and I had my mumps. We were living together and you were cooking pancakes and you were flipping it.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
God, yeah. Actually fills me with such delight thinking about that.
Yeah.
And now that we spent all the day thinking about food and sitting in the restaurant interviewing our next guest, it was just such a...
I'm actually hungry just talking about it.
Oh, we're just talking about food because our next guest on the podcast is the lovely Fred Syrex. From First Dates. Fred Syrex or Syrex.
He's the maitre d'.
Yeah, of Galvin at Windows. He's the maitre d' on First Dates. He's our friend now, Francis.
Yeah, well, if you say so.
I do say. He gave us some delicious...
ice cream.
Mm-hmm.
And advice.
He did. God, what a wonderful, pleasant guest he was.
What a lovely man.
What a lovely, lovely man.
What a lovely beard.
What a lovely beard. He doesn't snack. That's what he told us as well.
Yeah, doesn't snack.
He doesn't snack.
If you want to be like Fred Syrex, don't snack.
That's
a secret. That's how you can become... Fred Syrex.
It was a wonderful
episode.
What
else shouldn't you do?
It was a wonderful episode. It's episode 99. Enjoy. Do you feel at home here?
Yes, actually. Although I was once here, actually the last time I was here, I was here with a friend who was very drunk and we all kicked out because he started smoking.
Where were you sitting?
Over there.
Oh, you were in the bar, were you?
Yeah, in the bar. Yeah. Uh-huh. I wasn't smoking, but he just started smoking. He wouldn't put it out.
So even you got kicked out.
So, well, he got kicked out and I was obviously with him. So kind of,
Welcome back.
Yeah. So it's nice to be finally let in again. Yeah.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Private Parts Podcast. And this is where we read the most intimate and sordid details of our lives. Joined with us today is, I would say, one of my oldest friends in show business, because that's what we're in.
Yeah,
we're in show business.
Yeah.
Fred Syrex. Did I pronounce it right?
Perfect.
Was that perfect?
Perfect.
Fred, how are you, buddy?
I'm very good. Very, very good. But I hear your French is getting better.
Do you know what? My French is getting better because I'm now going out with a French girl.
That's one way to do it.
Weirdly enough, this is the problem with it, is that I think it's getting better, but French is like a hard language to learn. And I thought it would be easy, but... French people, I feel, speak faster than anyone else.
Well, so there's no obvious breaks between the words because it all flows. That's why it's kind of quite a rhythmic.
Is that right?
You don't speak French?
Oui, je parle français.
Ah, bah tu vois, tu parles français, ça va. On peut continuer en français le podcast.
Oui, bien sûr.
Et toi, Jamie?
Ça va, bien. Où est la boulangerie? Dans la bibliothèque.
C'est tout ce que tu peux dire.
Yeah, that's right, right? Isn't that right?
Yeah, very good.
Is that what you say to your girlfriend?
Yeah, I wake up in the morning and say to my girlfriend every morning, où est la bibliothèque?
Yeah. Because you want to learn how to read.
Yeah. But Fred, we are recording in Galvin at Windows, which is your restaurant that you look after. And we're sitting here where everyone's having a kind of a lunchtime meal. Has this ever happened before where a podcast has happened here?
It's never. It's the first ever podcast that we've recorded here.
Wow. That is
the first.
It's history. We've made history.
But wait, how long have you been looking after this place?
Well, we started here in May 2006, so it's 13 years. Oh, 13 years this year.
So you've done that the entire time?
Yeah, for 13 years.
Yeah. But you've always... I had like a look at your Wikipedia page, and you have been in kind of the restaurant business and everything like that for now so long. I mean, it's been a few years, hasn't it?
Well, I've been in this business for 30 years. I've been in the UK for 27 years and up here for 13 years. So when we opened, I mean, it was called Windows on the World before. And we took over a brand that was quite old and forgotten in a way. So we had a lot of work to do to convince people to come back to the 28th floor of the London Town Park Lane and show them and tell them we'll give them a good time. So it took us a long time to actually change the perception of what was here. And after 13 years, we're pleased we've done it.
But it's a beautiful... I've actually took... I went to Gavin at Windows for Valentine's Day. Do you remember about three years ago, I took my ex-girlfriend there. And we were in a really big fight at the time. And I remember we came on, we sat here, and we were having a big fight. And Fred was then, all I was trying to do was look happy for him. I was trying to look really happy. So Fred, tell me, so you grew up in France in a place called Longjem? Longjem?
Limoges.
Close enough.
Longjem.
Sorry, this is your French girlfriend? he's not listening to your tips.
It's too hard.
You just got to work it out.
But it's too hard to understand. The problem with the French language is that it has... It's like your surname. If I was going to look at your surname, I would say it was Syriac, but it's not. It's Syriac.
No, it's Syriac. It was the first time you pronounced it was good, yeah.
Was that the right way?
Yeah.
But you grew up in Limoges.
Limoges.
And your parents were in healthcare, though, weren't they?
That's right, yeah. Yes. Both were working in the French NHS.
Ah, okay. But both doctors or...?
They were both nurses. Yeah. And, you know, my parents always talked to me about their work and how proud they were about what they were doing. And for my dad and my mom, it was all about the patient and the quality of the care for the patient. And they were always fighting for the patient's right and for the patient's care. And my stance on service and my philosophy of service all derived from the way my parents taught me about the way that they were going about their jobs.
Yeah.
And it's all about the quality of that care and making sure that you deliver always an experience where people can trust you. My dad was telling me this story, you know, when I was a boy, he was telling me that. I said to him, "Why do you shave to go to work, Dad? You had this beautiful moustache, but he always was very, very cleanly shaved." He said, "Well, because I've got to inspire people. I've got to make sure that people can trust me.
Yeah.
And when I go into a room, they've got to know that I've arrived and I'm going to make them feel better and not worse." And then he told me another story. And this man was there, he was about 80 years old in a room, and he had the sheet up to his eyes almost, and he was in the intensive care unit of the cardiologic unit there at the hospital. So, you know, when people at this age were in the hospital, I mean, it's almost kind of the last chance for you, right? So he was scared to death. There is no other word.
Yeah.
And my dad came in the room and he said to him, he looked at him and he recognized that look, because this is the look of fear that he's seen all his life, in his professional life. And he looked at him and he says, "Kova, grandpa." And Kova in the local dialect means, "How are you, grandfather?" Because at the time, people didn't speak French. You know, if you were 80 years old in 1976, 1977 or 8, you know, you would speak the local dialect. It would be your first language. But my dad made that connection with him. He had engaged with him. And suddenly, the sheets came down and the man started to smile. And this is when you think about hospitality, you know, and service. This is what it is. And this is where the connection was made. That's what it's about.
But was he smiling at your dad because he liked him? Or was he smiling because he had a funny moustache? Is that what it was? Because you said that he had a big old moustache.
No, he was
like that.
Smiling because he recognized one of his own. And he suddenly felt at ease and he felt comfortable and he felt that he could rely and trust the man that just entered the room. That's what it's about. That's a connection that
we make.
Because
I suppose also a hospital is a sort of relatively alien place that you feel uncomfortable just being in for anything, really. So if the doctor can immediately put you at ease like that, you know, make him feel like he's at home, it's probably quite a nice way to...
But it's so true. But also, Fred, you know, so you're saying that everything that you learned about service was from your parents because you saw the way they treated other people.
Right.
And you thought that's how other people should be treated all the time. And because there's always that saying that they always think that in France, the service is not very good.
Who said that?
I don't know, man. This is what I hear, that apparently the service... I hear it occasionally, that apparently the service isn't very good.
Who do you hear that from?
Yeah, just all loads of French people. They go, when I go and speak to them, they go, the service isn't very good.
You speak to them in French.
In Russian, or, yeah. I speak to them in Russian. But where do you think that comes from then? Because you are known as, in the UK, you're known for being the best person in the whole of the UK for your service. You even have a nickname, which is...
Which is? What are you going to tell
me? I don't know. I'm just teeing you up.
Did you give him this
nickname? Yeah, yeah, yeah. You also have a nickname, which
amongst
is Big
me
Fred.
And my friends. No,
yeah. Yeah. It's me. It's Big Fred's your nickname. But you do. It's something like you have a nickname or you're known as, I remember it, but I can't quite. It's something like
the man.
The silver the server or.
The OG.
Is it the OG?
Who knows?
Who knows what it is? But where? But
the original gangster.
Yeah, that's it. He's the gangster of the servicing world. Yeah. And if you fuck around with him, he really takes it down. But so where did it come from with... Where does that come from that people say French service is bad? Or is that just a myth? It's true. It's in France. That's what people
really?
Say. Yeah, do you not think that?
I mean, I've had some of the best service
I have
ever
as well. But the rumour is that people say, you know, they go, God, when you go to restaurants, French waiters are rude, but that's not kind of...
I think maybe there's an expectation in France that it's going to be fantastic. Yeah. And so therefore, when it's bad, you think, oh my God. You know, and then people generalize and they say that all the French are bad or all the French are bad at service, which is obviously not the case.
Yeah, yeah.
So I don't know where you got this from, but...
and stop spreading that weird rumors.
Yeah, start spreading
rumors. There's enough rumors going around in the UK about the French.
But then you decided to come to the UK, having been in France and you had worked in service in France for about 3 years or something like that. Then you came over here. And what did you find different about working in France to working in the UK?
Other than the language.
Obviously. Other than the language and the service that was so bad in France.
I think that what I like about the UK is that people are open to new ideas.
Sure.
So if you're in France, I mean, you're going to eat French food. You know,
yeah.
By and large, that's what you're going to eat. But if you're in the UK, I mean, you eat any cuisine in the world.
Yeah.
And it's evolved so much. I mean, I arrived in 1992, now we're in 2019, and the world of hospitality, the world of restaurant is just incredibly different. I mean, there's so much choice now, so many different cuisines, so many different places. So you could eat a different cuisine every day of the week. It's fantastic.
Yeah. Mm.
So did both your parents were in healthcare. Did they ever teach you anything that came in handy? Or, you know, in the restaurant.
Stitching.
Perhaps like helping a customer who's choking. Do you ever do the Heimlich manoeuvre?
That's been my dream, though.
I haven't. But I think that what it is, you know, I mean, obviously, your parents
are
Dr. very...
Heimlich manoeuvre.
Yeah, no, I haven't done that, no. I mean, they're very important. They shape the way you think. And for me, it was... their values and their principles and the way that they led by example in the work that they were doing and always leading from the front and always thinking first about the patient care. Mm. It was always about the patients. And this is my approach. At the end of the day, you know, if you want to do a good job, first of all, you need to know what good looks like.
Yeah.
And a lot of people don't think about that. What is good? But good, you know, you can look at it in a very broad way. You can look at good, you know, is this tablecloth, you know, is it good the way it's been put on the table, you know, but then you can think of so many different things. So it's about that, really, and about understanding what you want at the end. You know, how do you want your patient to feel? And, but most importantly, how would you feel if you were a patient in this bed and you're about to die? You feel scared because you think that you're going to die. How do you want to be treated? So I think that if you can't treat somebody well when you are in that position, then you're missing out completely on the meaning of life, really. And I think that's very, very, very bad.
And also, if they're not dying and they're having some delicious food at Galvin on Windows, then you can actually give them an amazing experience and that attention to detail and quality.
Because it's always about the customer.
Yeah.
Whether it's a patient, whether it's a customer, whether it's a guest, it's always somebody else. And I've got the theory, you know, that when this is about giving love, you know, and when you think about what is love, you know, I mean, we all think about what is love. I think that love is about giving, and if you give, you love.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
notion of giving, but what is it that you give? I mean, it's not just about I'm giving you a phone, I'm giving you money. It's about giving with intent, is that intent where you've got goodness and kindness in your heart, and this is in that spirit that you're going to give it. And the more you give, the more you love, and actually the better you feel. It's such an amazing feeling.
Yeah, it is. You're quite a giving person, aren't you?
I'm very giving. Yeah, I think I do. I give a lot. I do. So you think, so Fred, you think... So is that
or
how
are you,
you
more of a receiver?
I just mix it up.
You're
versatile.
One of those people. Which one do you favour more?
I'm just versatile.
Giving or receiving?
I just both. Whatever. If it's a Friday, it's probably just more giving, isn't it? Because it's a Friday.
I enjoy giving more.
Yeah, so do I. Too, it's way better. Fred, there we go. But Fred, so and you're saying that you describe, like, if you were going to describe love, then you would say it's all about, you would say it's about giving and giving out what you have to offer as an individual. And
that's sometimes you don't think about why you could give. And you suddenly give something to somebody and you think, my God, why didn't I think of giving earlier? You know, we all give and we think that, you know, because that evokes a certain spirit of generosity, kindness, you know, of sharing with others. But we don't think about giving as much as we should. And when we do it, it makes you feel good.
It makes you feel great. And people, I think, sometimes can be a bit covetous of their, you know, things. But actually, when you do just give your, well, give whatever to people, you just feel very nice.
But,
you don't always think of doing it.
No,
it's not
it's
because
true.
You're selfish or something, but because it's a conscious decision that you make that you decide to give. And
yeah, but it's also, it's a selfless decision, which, and lots of people, a lot of the time,
that's right.
What we're
that's
doing is we're focusing so much on ourselves, and that's the problem with the world that we live in, that everyone is so out to win themselves that everyone forgets to kind of give.
Speaking of giving, I once, like, when, you know, there were these, there's a sort of homeless choir.
And you took all his money.
No. And they had a bucket, you know, at the front with one of those things at the top, so the coins go down into the bucket. And I was walking past, and I thought, well, I felt like giving them some of my change. So I felt around, got some jingling.
Some of it. I love it. Yeah. I had like £5 in my pocket, and I gave them
parking,
like
50. Obviously. So I walked past and I felt all the jingly coins and I threw them in and I realised that I'd accidentally thrown my house keys into a homeless donation bucket. Well, it's rubbing it in their faces because I had to go and, you know, get it out.
Did you have to? How did you?
Yeah.
But wait, what did you do?
Sorry, these are my house keys. Sorry, it's like really rubbing it in their face.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
But Fred, so carrying on that idea of love, and so, are you one? Would you consider yourself one of those people that I call like an empath? Do you kind of empath?
Like a psychic?
No, an empath.
I've never heard that word.
It's a psychic, someone who can read minds.
No, it's not, Fred. It's not. It's someone who is incredibly empathetic and actually thinks about other people first.
Are you calling him pathetic?
Yeah, I'm calling him pathetic. You are empathetic, Fred.
That's really a bit harsh. In his own restaurant.
Invited me in, I'm calling him pathetic and then stealing stuff on the way out. Do you think you think
what?
About...
What was that?
Do you think you think about other people first before yourself? Or
I try to.
Yeah.
I try to. And I don't like to use the word try because when you say try, you know you've already failed.
You're preparing to fail. Yeah.
Yes. I think it's something that we work on and we get better at. The more we do it, the better we get at it. It's all about that practice, like anything. It's like
incremental
sports.
perfection.
Exactly.
Yeah, but you can always have been like that. When did you learn that? Because that's just self-awareness, right? That's you just becoming self-aware of who you
are. I think it's the evolution. I think that we are all masters of our own destiny. We are in control of our own mind, of our own thoughts, and we have to decide what we want to be. You know, you can decide to be like a bottle of wine that's going to age well and you can drink in 40 years, or you can be the young one that's just going to turn into vinegar and you can't drink after 2 years. So we have a responsibility within ourselves to be what we want to be and to remain that way and to keep improving. Mm. And I'm not there by any stretch of the imagination. Do you know what I mean? But I think this attainment and having maybe that sense of fulfillment and satisfaction within yourself that you are actually getting there little by little, by bit.
I was just talking about this to someone the other day, but that's what I feel like with jiu-jitsu, because every day you come out of the gym, you're feeling...
Fred likes training.
Do you train jiu-jitsu?
I box, but yeah.
Ah, okay. But yeah, so similar, but you know, with jiu-jitsu, it's a very cerebral thing, because you're learning new techniques and stuff in a live fighting scenario where you're both at 100%, right? But every time you leave the gym, you feel like you know in your heart that you would beat the person who walked into the gym. So you feel every day, every time you train,
that you're learning something,
that you're growing. Yeah, which is such a like rewarding and intellectually stimulating thing.
This is what combat sport you know do to you. I mean, combat sports is just. I mean, people think it's just the violence, you know, the physical aspect of it. But there's a very big mental side to it where you have to really think about it. And it's also about your state of mind, you know, your confidence.
And truth versus self-delusion.
That's true.
Because people think, people walk around and they think, now I can handle myself in a fight. I know what I know what I'm doing.
But constantly think about fighting all the day.
Well, I am thinking about jiu-jitsu pretty much all the time.
Yeah.
But people do walk around, and even people who are trained in some martial arts, which may be good in their rule set in that game, because it is a game, but it creates a sort of false bravado and sort of false self-delusion.
But there's a difference between fighting in a ring or fighting in your gym when you're training and fighting for real in the street.
In real life, exactly.
Very big difference.
And I think... I can't remember where I was going with that, but it was on that sort of incremental.
But it's self-awareness, right? You're constantly learning.
That's what it was. You're constantly overcoming and being shown what you know your failings in a very open way, because you're on the mat being.
But you said something very important: truth versus delusion.
Truth versus self-delusion.
This is what it's about. What is truth? I mean, we could talk about it all day about truth.
But the truth is, in this sense, is like you know, every time you submit someone in jiu-jitsu. You are essentially in that moment. You know, you would have conquered in a mortal struggle. You would have killed them, right? And so there's that realization in their mind. Okay, he's just submitted me, or when it happens to you, it's a very humbling thing, especially when you first start, because it's like.
But it depends how you lose. If you lose and you've given it your all and you've lost. Then you lose honorably and you feel happy about losing.
You do not feel happy. You never feel happy when you lose.
The thing is, because you never feel happy, right? Obviously, you're constantly like doing little bouts, right?
If you gave everything you had, you don't feel unhappy. You're okay.
Do you think so?
Yeah, I think if you feel like you've taken something from the loss, right? So if you feel like you've learned something, like I got submitted doing that. I'm not going to do that again, or I'm not going to make that mistake again, because that, you know, and so you learn, you take lessons from your failures, right?
But okay, that's an interesting thing. So, Fred, what do you think is the biggest lesson that you've learned throughout your life so far? What have you really learned? So, I was thinking about this the other day, and what I've realized that I wasn't and that I have to be now is about self-awareness. I'm now incredibly self-aware, and I think that's the biggest lesson I've learned, to become self-aware. What is your one that you've come across? Do you think?
I'm not sure, but possibly it's the ability to get up when you've been knocked down.
Mm.
How fast are you going to get up? And how strong is going to be your recovery so that you're able to straight away attack and be on the front foot, whatever it is that you're doing. And that ability to get up and keep going, regardless of what happened, and just keep going and stay true to yourself and your vision, and stay true to what you want to be and who you are. I think that's the most important.
But that's interesting, because a lot of people would, you know, would probably sit and listen to this podcast and look at you and think that you are in a certain place and all those kind of things. But in fact, throughout in life and still now, you have those knockbacks. don't
every
you?
Day.
Every yeah. day, exactly. But a lot of people don't think that is happening.
Well, because, well, as the Buddha said, life is suffering, right? You're always going to have these struggles throughout life that you have to just kind of pick yourself up and dust yourself off and keep going.
But I think is it suffering? Because it's this thing about, you know, pain is inevitable, but suffering is optional.
Yeah, right? Well, that's so, true. But
you know, because sometimes something happens and I'm feeling, oh my God, I'm feeling so bad and I just want to be by myself. I don't want to talk to anybody and it's just me. But that suffering also, I'm inflicting
it.
But I'm inflicting it on myself because I could just say, you know what? I don't want to suffer.
No, true.
I just want to shut myself off and go and nobody knows. I even forget about it.
I think that's the thing. Like, I think,
can I do that?
Yeah.
I can't always do it. But when I can, I feel so good.
Yeah,
it is definitely your interpretation of the pain, which is inevitable, right? Because life is like it is full of inevitable chaos and pain, and you know, but like you say, it's your interpretation and your dealing with that pain, and your ability to get yourself up off the ground and continue.
But there is the pain and there is the suffering, because it may be that it hurts, but does it have to hurt this much? Do I have to suffer? Do you know, and effectively slash my wrist by myself, you know? I don't need to do that.
Yeah.
I can just forget about it and just, look, life is beautiful. I'm alive today.
Yeah, well, exactly.
Yeah, but it's so hard sometimes to change that mindset, right? And that's what a lot of people have sometimes, where they actually can't change the mindset.
People get caught in there.
You get caught in that turmoil of just, like, thinking bad things and thinking that it's kind of some negative thoughts and that suffering thoughts, and you can't actually get out of it. I remember my girlfriend, I talk about this a lot, my girlfriend when I was younger broke up with me. It was honestly the worst thing in the entire world. And still to this day, I don't think I felt pain like that. Pain of that kind of. Have you ever been broken up with, Fred?
Oh, I remember. Well, as soon as you said it, I remember this girlfriend. I was 16 and I was working in the summer and I was so in love with this girl. My God, I was so in love with her. I don't know. You know the song, Now That We Find Love, What Are We Going to Do With It? It was exactly like that. I had no idea what I was going to do. You know the song.
Fred, no one knows that song.
Anyway. Now that we found love.
Actually, I do know that one.
Anyway, there you go. So anyway,
so you were with this girl, 16 years old.
I was with this girl working together during the summer, and then the summer finished. I went back to school, I went back home, and I was just heartbroken because she was not there. But suddenly she decided that she was going to come and visit, and I was so excited and so happy. And then it so happened that she broke up with me the weekend that she came to visit me and my parents. And I took
her. Did she do it in front of you? Did she come and do it to you or before she got there?
Yeah, we had a couple of days. I mean, it was just like one of these. Just why did she come? I have no idea. Anyway, we just went out. We went for a drink. Oh, you know what you do, you know. But it was just the spirit was gone. It was gone. Mm. Anyway, she left. I took her to the station. I come back home, and she told me that it was over. And oh my God, I was so sad. I mean, it took me a year to recover. But I remember sitting on my sofa like that, and I was on my dad's shoulder. my dad with his moustache. My dad. And he was going like this. It's okay, Fred. It's gonna be okay.
But it's funny, this is what I was finding out the other day, and this is so interesting about that love, right? And look, we are all in our own relationships. We love our various partners. Yeah,
I
love all my partners, but no, but as in, I don't think... I never think. But my girlfriend, I love her more than anything. However, that love when you're 16 years old, that first love you ever have.
She's 16,
yeah. The girl I love, but that love when you're 16 years old, nothing ever kind of hits the same as that for some reason.
Alain Delon famously said that first love is the love that you remember all your life because it's the first one and there's no other love that can transcend that one. That's what he famously said.
Really? So that's what it is. You can never
and Alain Delon, you think the same.
Yeah, but it's just it's never kind of how it's kind of like the time.
You're not the first person to point that out, actually.
That me and him are very similar. Yeah, I get that a lot. I walk down the street and people go, hey, you're not
Alain Delon.
I was about to go Lalonde. But so I'm interested as well in the fact that do you think when you talked about service and all those kind of things in a restaurant, right? If I was going to set up a restaurant, would it be, do you think service is, if you had great food but poor service, do you think that's better than having a restaurant that has not great food but incredible service? What is a better restaurant?
Look, service at the end of the day is like a religion.
Yeah.
And it's just like life, you know, is about the pursuit of virtue, knowing what is right and knowing what is wrong, and looking for the good. If you open a restaurant, you got to open a restaurant that's going to be good, and service has to be part of it, and the service has to be good. For the service to be good, you need to have processes and standard, but also you need to understand human nature and have some basic understanding of psychology. I mean, this is a very simple stuff. You need to understand what makes people tick. Like, for example, if you come here at the reception, the first thing, the very first standard on the customer journey is to see, smile, say hello to people before they see, smile, say hello to you, because it's my job to be charming first and not the other way around. You know, as a customer, you're going to pay my wages. You know, this is how I pay for Christmas, and people have to be happy. I've got to make sure that as soon as they arrive, they know that they arrived. Now, when you have a restaurant, you know what? Obviously, in the UK, back in the 60s and 70s, I mean, Alberto famously described the UK as a culinary desert, because there was almost no chefs there, and the food wasn't what it is now. And you needed that celebrity chef. So in a way, wrongly, people now assuming that it's just about the food, but the food in a restaurant, you know, a restaurant is like a cake, and the food is really one slice of the cake.
Yeah.
But there are other slices, and services is one of them. But of course, there are other slices. You have to open a good restaurant, you have to master all the slices. You have to understand them all. And if you've got mediocre food, good service will make it taste better, right?
Yeah.
But if you've got mediocre food and the service is bad, then it's really bad. The whole thing is a shamble.
I thought you were saying if you have Mallorca food... food from Mallorca. And then I'm really saying mediocre.
It's very nice, the food of Mallorca.
Well, yes, what is the food in Mallorca like?
Paella, just, no? Yes. It'd be like paella and things like that. Fred, we've got to hold it there for 1 second, because Francis, you have to give us the question of the week.
Oh, yes.
What is the question of the week, my friend?
So this question is about the hospitality industry.
Okay.
Somewhat.
Okay.
What hotel in London did the former Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher die in?
What hotel in London did the former Prime Minister of London, Margaret Thatcher, die in?
The Ritz. It was the Ritz.
Oh. Is that the been revealed? How did you know that, Fred?
I just read the news.
Yeah.
Oh, is that? So do I, but I didn't read that section. I didn't read that. Did she die in the Ritz?
Yes, reading in the Ritz. Yeah.
It's the one that I've been spent so
well,
many times.
She was in her room, obviously, in the Ritz.
I spent so many times in so many different hotels. I have never, ever, ever spent time in the Ritz. The only one.
You should try.
Yeah, it's lovely.
I know the chef, John Williams. I can organise a table and a room for you if you want.
So you're saying, Fred, that if I phoned up any restaurant anywhere in London and I gave your name, I dropped your name, you could get me a reservation?
For sure.
Okay. So
and a red carpet.
Really? And Francis would like the paparazzi, wouldn't you? You'd like them to turn up.
I think he's trying to say that he would like the paparazzi. He feels embarrassed. Asking for a friend.
All right, Fred, we've got to stop there because that's the end of part one. But please stick around because we'll be back with you in part two, buddy.
Thank you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.